Welcome to the Williams Nikken YB Herton phone conference line.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning.
Good morning, all.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Nice to have you on the call.
Nice to be on the call.
Well, good. I think it's about time to get started. Mary Lou, good morning. Must be squishy since you're talking to me visually instead of audibly. I did my swish. My lip is feeling better now. My lip is well. Must be from that swishing and the magnet. So, it is Wednesday today. I don't even know what day Wednesday is supposed to be. See, we have not a terrific name for Wednesday. So, Wednesday is my day to talk, and I am here to teach and support the practice of habitual health style choices, becoming more mind and body fit, and help us to be able to focus on doing that. And so, first of all, I'd like to know if there's anyone on the call that hasn't been here before. If there is, you can speak up and say where you're calling from and maybe what your need is or interest is. Before we go any further, I am going to quiet the chimes in my ear. I don't want them either in our ears or on our recording. So good morning again, everyone. And calls are recorded on www.allswell.org by Steve Crowfoot. And so if you miss a call, then you can go there and listen to it. And I took a few notes yesterday, Monty. Let us look and see what else we have here. Let me get my...
And I'll get yesterday's call up tonight. I didn't even go into the office last night. I was so busy. So I'll get it up tonight.
Okay.
So Monty, sorry, Monty. We'll get up for you.
That's okay. I'll just get back and listen to it before Friday. Thank you, though.
So our word definition... I could step a little high there. One of them is an antigen. And so what is an antigen? Oh, I think I forgot to I forgot to put the thing that makes the words move. I didn't do a pronunciation. So I've moved some of these around so they're opening the wrong ones. Anaphylactic is an allergic reaction to a foreign protein resulting from previous exposure to it. And I think we've heard that word a little bit. If I can get that one to come back. Tyramine is kind of like a part of an amino acid, the amino acid tyrosine. I don't know if I can get that one to move. But... some of the rest of them are. And so here's it's abundant in ripe cheese and has a breakdown of tyrosine by removal of part of it. I don't think we need to know quite all those details. So on we go. Today, yesterday we talked about some food sensitivities, and I have been kind of wanting to... Mary Lou and I have been talking about doing a group of lessons, and we want to talk to our hosts and our people who see what they are interested in having a group of lessons about, and so that we're mostly talking about one thing all week so we can break it up in small parts. And so this might be an example of how we might do that. So yesterday the sensitivity of food sensitivities was kind of introduced, and so I thought, well, maybe we would talk about it a little bit more, and maybe have some time to discuss it and some of the challenges that you have with it. So food sensitivity leads to some of these problems that we have on the screen, and I'll read them so that if you're not looking at the screen that you might know. Maybe we can look at it and you can tell us if you have some of these. Well, here's the one I have probably the most, is migraine, and I have kind of headaches, but mostly now I have zigzags in front of my eyes. What else? Irregular heartbeats from food sensitivity, I think. Bloating from food sensitivity. Fatigue from food sensitivities. How about some of the rest of you looking at the ones that are on and able to see the screen and talk? Don't have coconut swishing going on in your mouth. Maybe you can look and see if there's any that you would like to say maybe are challenges for you. Or if you're not food, think you're any, have any food sensitivities.
I know that mood swings, I didn't know that could be a food sensitivity. I've always figured it was a sugar high or low.
What is that, Mary Lou? Which one?
The mood swings.
Oh, mood swings, yeah.
Mood swings, and I always thought that that was just a sugar high or low, but that's interesting to know that that could just be a food, or it can be a food sensitivity, and also water retention. I never knew that. Huh, great.
If I eat salt, particularly not the real salt, I can tell a difference between eating the real salt and the other salt, and I do retain water with that. I'm pretty sensitive, I guess. And then the mood swings, and that, the sugar, if I eat too much sugar, I get really grumpy.
And me too. Okay, that's the one. Okay.
So that's what we're sensitive to. We're sensitive to that. Some people can just eat sugar and they don't see that it affects them. But I think some of the other food sensitivities is like diabetes probably, or, you know, it's doing something else to you besides some of these things.
You know, this bladder issue, I have a friend that drinks too much, well, she does drink a lot of water, but anytime you go out to a restaurant, she will order Diet Pop. And I know she has a severe bladder issue, and I wondered if it could have been the aspartame or whatever is in that Diet Pop that she has a food sensitivity to.
Mm-hmm. Well, every time we start talking about these, I think I must be allergic, not allergic, but I have sensitivities to that also, because if I eat sugar, I can just feel my bladder burning. It is, give me some cranberry capsules. And I should not be eating this sugar. I can really tell. Sometimes it does one thing, sometimes it does another. I don't get nauseated very easily.
Well, her issue is that she can't make it to the restroom, so that's a serious deal.
Oh, she should stay away from that. But she could also, the cranberry capsules help very much. I ate two in the morning and two at night, and some of them are better than others.
Okay.
Cranberry really protects the bladder. Anybody else? I don't have Kathleen on here.
Well, I know the two that I'm real sensitive to, and one of them is weight problems, and that is carbohydrates. Foods that are high in carbohydrates, they just do two things to me. It spikes my sugar, because of being a diabetic. So if I eat certain types of carbohydrates, particularly like potatoes, anything starchy, pasta, that sort of stuff, forget it, because my blood sugar is going to blow up to about in the high 200s and the low 300s. And I know that as an example. The other thing is the water retention that when I do eat improperly certain foods that I know my body will blow up and be just strictly because of water retention. But there's a caveat to that. Since I have switched to real salt in everything, I don't use no table salt whatsoever, but since I've also switched to real salt, I noticed that I don't have the swelling in my ankles and my hands and my calves that I normally do, so I contribute that to that also to water retention. And in some of my reading in regards to coconut water, that I do need a certain amount of more salt, sodium, than what I normally would get in my meals, so I do use about a quarter of a teaspoon of salt in my eggs every morning, and because of that, I still don't get the water retention like I used to. The other thing that I have, and I haven't been able to pinpoint it down to a food, and that is the visual migraines. They call them optical migraines, I think, to where basically a movement starts to happen in my left eye, and it actually will go all the way across my eye. And from that, I just basically just lay down and close my eyes for about 15 or 20 minutes, and it's gone. But I haven't been able to contribute that to a food, but those are certain things that do happen to me. But the other ones I contribute to food.
Well, that's the same thing as I have, Monty, and that is an optical migraine. And so anything that causes migraines causes that. But also, the other thing I found is dehydration. I had one the other day, and I just couldn't figure it out. And I finally realized that was the day I think it was on Sunday, and I didn't drink as much as I usually do. So that all those foods that cause it, migraine. Okay, anyone else want to share?
Ruth, this is Margaret. I was going to say food cravings. Sometimes I get really, really crave something sweet, and I have a hard time controlling that. So I think food cravings would be one, and then that contributes to mood swings. I think it kind of works together. And then muscle joint aches and pains, I have some of those sometimes. And so I think those, and I don't know how to control those, control the joint pains. So those would be two things particularly, or all of them sound great.
Uh-huh. So, thank you, Margaret. I'm thinking about that one. Yesterday it was, I had just had really one of those tensions in my neck where Mary Lou and I have talked about, whenever we talk about green signs, we talk about having those muscle or joint aches and pain. And boy, I've had it, but I just didn't think about, you know, what it is that fixes that. And I ran in and drank a couple of heaping teaspoons of my green zymes, and before I washed out the cut, that was gone again. And so always remember the green zymes when you have that. And so that means, I think that means what is happening is we've gotten ourselves somehow too acidic.
Right.
And so that just balances out that. Okay, anybody else want to say anything about any of these? Okay, let's go to the food sensitivities and the fact that they cause the activation of the immune system. You know, I've got a bunch of information and everything about this, and it almost feels like I should start at the other end of where we are, how it's sensitive, but we'll just go with it. Here's the immune cells, which is an antigen, and it collects up that antigen that's causing the problem there. And then the antibodies bind up the antigen. And then here comes Pac-Man, the macrophage. Microphage? I didn't look that one up. It comes along and gobbles them up. And that's just like a Pac-Man. And we use that also with things that are like vitamin E. Gobbles up free radicals, and they also are part of the immune system that gobble up these antigens and destroys it. But when immune cell is activated, then it's also going to be causing, inviting more antibodies in, and those are what's causing the mucus and that different reaction that you have to that antigen. So, any comments on that? What's the comment about that? Follow that around in your body? Okay, so food sensitivities, inflammation, brain reactions. So Monty and I have both recognized that we get some kind of a migraine from food sensitivities. And probably the rest of us have some kind of reaction, inflammation. Inflammatory reactions, all of these, because whenever we have an, whenever something we eat becomes something that irritates us, then it calls up the immune system, which produces the antibodies and everything. Then we have inflammation and some different kind of inflammatory response because of the immune system producing all of those antibodies and affecting our body. And so so one of the things that causes the one that causes a migraine is aged cheese. I know on the list of high ones is Parmesan. And I don't know what the other ones are. That's the one that I can eat a little bit of that and it doesn't bother me, but probably if I ate too much, then it would. It seems that some of the ones that are recommended that we don't eat, the glutamates, don't seem to affect me, where our other ones affect me greatly. And that's probably true with other people. Okay. The research is suggesting that people suffering from migraines may not effectively neutralize the tyramine that's in some of the foods that probably react to. In general, the sensitivities are divided into two groups. One would be an allergic response, and one would be just a food intolerance. And the ones that are allergies are defined as clinical reactions to food or food additives that involve the immune system. And so the allergies activate the immune system, but the food tolerance, intolerances, are a different, they do not. They have a different way of affecting us. So a lot of, something I didn't know is that about 60% of our immune system is in our digestive system. I don't know where I thought it was, but I didn't think it was in my digestive system. Anybody have any comments about that?
Could you repeat that comment, please?
So the immune system is a complex system of cells and molecules found throughout our body to protect it from potentially harmful foreign molecules. And so whatever you're insensitive to is something that is foreign molecule. But it is most active in the areas of the body which have some direct contact with the outside world, such as the skin, the lungs, the nose, and the gastrointestinal tract. And I guess, I don't know where I thought it was, but I guess I didn't think about it at all. The majority of the potential harmful molecules enter your body through your intestinal tract. Therefore, it's not surprising that over 60% of the immune activity occurs in this area. The immune system is made up of a team of different cells, each having its own specific function, work together to protect the body from foreign invaders. You have B cells producing antibodies, the T cells out there with their microscopes conducting surveillance for potentially dangerous molecules and kill the dangerous cells such as disease-causing bacteria. And then the macrophages are the scavenger cells of your body acting like garbage trucks, cleaning up the residue and potentially moving the potentially dangerous substances. Got busy little bodies here. Got the whole army in there. Got the garbage trucks in there. And then the B cells calling out the antibodies. The tanks. So then all this team will decide how much of a threat these molecules are to our body. And, of course, new molecules are constantly being introduced into our body by what we eat. And an allergic reaction occurs when your body identifies molecules as potentially harmful and toxic, and they are called antigens. The surveillance cells bind to the antigens, activating the immune cells to release histamine and other chemicals, which signals the scavenger microphages to come into sight and destroy them. Sounds like a war zone, doesn't it? But we have to watch what we eat if we don't want to have too much of a war zone. Allergic reactions involving excessive histamine can cause anaphylactic reactions. And that would be your asthma attack, difficulty in breathing, which are responsible for 29,000 people in the United States ending up in the emergency room ward each year. When the surveillance immune systems bind to the antigen and send out chemical messengers, they also communicate with other immune cells, the B cells, which are instructed to make antibodies to the antigen. And there we have the immune cells bond the antigen and release the chemical messages in this diagram. The antibodies are long branched molecules that have places for recognition binding and binding or attachment of the antigen on one side, and on the other side they can call into action other immune responses. But they're pretty fancy little molecules. When it bonds to the molecule, it acts like a red flag. So anyway, I don't know how much of this we want to memorize or know, but that's what's going on.
Is the antigen the bad guy?
Yes. So there he is right there. The antibody has got him. See, and here over here, the antibodies bind the antigen. And now here's, I guess the macrophage, looks like the macrophage is eating the whole thing, antibodies and all. Because he's still stuck in there. An antibody will only bind one specific antigen and nothing else. So he's been taught to attack a certain one. When the antibody binds or sticks to the dangerous molecule, it acts like a red flag, identifying the molecule as something potentially damaged, which I just read. And then the macrophage can eat it up. The immune cell binds antigen and is activated to make antibodies. So that seems like the same thing. Food intolerance. Okay, so that was the allergies. The food intolerance does not involve the immune system. And so these are maybe food sensitivities that they're an intolerance. The majority of the toxic responses to food is a result of food intolerance rather than food allergy. And a food intolerance response is defined as any reproducible toxic response to food that does not involve the immune system. So that's also probably not going to really cause inflammation. I guess that's a guess on my part. Because it's the immune system that gets the inflammatory response, I think. see if I'm right. A food can contain a molecule that your body has difficulty breaking down or digesting, causing an intolerance response that the molecule is allowed to continue down your food, your intestinal tract. So a lactose intolerance is an example. Food intolerance, because the person doesn't have any lactase, and now Donald mentioned this, I think, yesterday. Your body doesn't have lactase, so it cannot break it down. If we don't have the right enzymes, we can't break it down. So that's one of the ways. Intolerances can be caused by food additives, such as sulfites, which are added to processed foods. Other types are tyrosine. That one is on a different slide here. Preservatives and additives and gluten. Along with toxic foods, alcohol consumption and other anti-inflammatories can destroy the stomach lining, causing stomach inflammation and inadequate digestion of food or lack of hydrochloric acid. So they think you have stomach acid, so they have medications that decrease stomach acid, but also decreases the ability to digest the food properly. So you have these people who think they have acid stomach, and maybe some of them do, and some of them might, but then they give them that medication, then they can't really digest because they don't have the proper hydrochloric acid in their stomach to be able to do that. Then it passes into the lower intestine. Voila, problems. I know about that. Gives you a horrible stomach ache. I thought, well, some of you guys maybe do too. So some of the foods that support the detoxification of tyramine would be the onion, the Brussels sprouts, the garlic, and broccoli. No wonder everybody puts garlic in everything. Helps you digest better. And then, of course, the gluten tolerance. I think we've discussed that sufficiently to kind of just list it and say, yes, we've discussed that enough. I think one of them that's quite interesting is the leaky gut. I didn't understand what a leaky gut was, but before that, I want to talk about, well, just briefly, the food sensitivities and processed foods, because they are some of the causes of a leaky gut. So we need to really read the labels, but then the thing that comes along is the fact that the labels don't even include everything in processed foods. They're just not being that careful of making sure that everything is listed in there. Let's look at the leaky gut, and then the barrier function of your small intestine works well most of the time. However, research has shown that when it's compromised, it becomes leaky and allows molecules that normally wouldn't get into your body to sneak through. And right at the tip of that little villa, V-I-L-L-I, then that's where that happens frequently. The molecules then travel through your liver, where they may be destroyed. If they are not, they will end up in your bloodstream and travel throughout your whole body. And then sometimes people will get rashes. They'll have aches and pains or different things just because they have these foreign substances that are not supposed to end up in your whole bloodstream coming through because they leak through in the gut. It's the term is commonly used to describe the condition when your intestinal wall is broken down, allowing large food particles to pass through. It can be caused by intestinal inflammation from parasites or microbial infections as well. Pardon me?
Microbial.
Thank you. I didn't know how to say that. Who was that?
Kathleen.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen. And microbial infections as well as a food allergy response and can result in the development of multiple food allergies. Kathleen could probably give us a whole big lesson on this. I know she studied it quite a bit. Do you have any comments about it? Kathleen?
I know I have the leaky gut, and I've worked on it for years, and I've worked, you know, you have to really watch what you eat and when you eat, and and get make sure you have the probiotic. I think that's so important, and I had a lot of hydrochloric acid that I used to take. Sometimes you just get involved and kind of get buzzy headed and forget, but my skin mm-hmm. certainly breaks out, especially my hands, and then mm-hmm. internally I can tell I don't feel well when I had a hit.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it interesting now on my hands, that it's breaking out in little round places, just like a bomb went off or something just burst through in one certain spot and just made circles around it, and all the skin's burned off. It's just like it's burned.
I had a few of those on my legs when I had psoriasis. It was called coin psoriasis or something like that, because it's perfectly round.
Really?
Yeah. So I want to tell you, so I can give you a little bit. I don't know if I'm happy I can give you that, or, but anyway, that might be of some help to you.
Yeah,
one other thing that I read that I need to say is that I have been telling you guys about exercising before you eat. And there is comments in here that maybe we shouldn't be exercising right before we eat. If we have been exercising, we should let ourselves rest, because it is a stress to our body, and we want to have our body be able to absorb the food, and it needs to not have any stress or have less stress. And so we maybe should individually, especially, question whether that's a good idea for us. So I don't know if I'll have to change our chart, not to exercise before you eat. Maybe I'll have to exercise, I don't know, just do it all at once like most people do.
You know, that must tie in with, you know, how for years they say make sure everything, the table talk is all calm and nice at the table because you don't do your food well.
That's right.
Kind of
sit down
in.
And be calm. It's all about getting to this digestion to work smoothly so that we won't have a leaky gut, and then we have all these food sensitivities and responses, and they might be inflammation, red inflamed patches, I think Kathleen just described one, called dermatitis, asthma, joint pain, have all been related to food toxic food responses, and different forms of arthritis. So probably the biggest danger for us is processed foods, or any other kinds of damaging pollutants. And just like we were talking about the stress in our lives. So, candies such as chocolate, nails, they're talking here about the things that can be in your body that are in your foods that you didn't know about. Candies such as chocolate may also contain colorings, additives, and preservatives, as well as simple sugars. One other last question in this is, why do we crave the foods that we are sensitive to? And so the hypothesis is that while eating foods to which you are allergic can cause a rash or sneezing, the body may also experience a soothing response from the presence of the chemical messengers, increasing the desire to eat more of that food. Okay, what are we going to do? We are going to avoid the toxins and the acidifying foods. We are going to do that with our wellness home, our pure air, and our water. I did mention in here about what the toxins that are coming in the air and through the air and water, so we need to have a MECAN answer for that, which we do, air and water. We have the acidifying, the alkaline food to balance out so we're not acidic. We mentioned the green zymes, but also the Siaga. And look at our foods that we're going to eat, looking at that fact that they should be alkaline. We're getting back to that again. Have our protein sources be non-acidic and non-toxic, have no refined artificial sugars or artificial sugars, and use a body balance for a good protein source and other good ones that we know are good for us, and help relieve stress with our sleep system, and have good times, and help other people by doing so, have an increased stream of income, make good choices about what we're eating, and that we should help us out. So that's what I have to say about that. Does anybody have any comments about anything, or if any of this might be helpful to anybody? Okay.
Can I ask a question not having to do with this call?
Yes, you may.
I mean, I think somebody here might be able to help me. We had an in-home last night, and a sweet lady came here that just out of the blue, her kidneys have stopped working. And what do they call that, renal something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they don't know why, and it has just happened out of the blue. Now, she does have really high blood pressure. They've even gotten her ready. She had a big scar in her arm, but they've gotten her ready for dialysis. And, you know, other than our Pymag water, I've encouraged her to...
Well, whenever people have a high blood pressure, like, you know, like Matt did, that's what the big thing, one of the first things is going to go is the kidneys. And so she needs to get the salt out of her diet, which is a big thing. Watch what she's eating to really lower that salt intake. And then, of course, the water, and I put the backflip on my back over her kidneys. You're the one that had the guy that had help with that in Yakima.
Yeah. And I was actually to even sleep with the Power Mag.
That's even better. Yeah.
Okay.
And then change her diet knowing what for her to eat with a food chart, especially the pH balance.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Okay. Well, I even had one person here suggest to her about the osteodense for, you know, transporting things to the right place. I just kind of still trying to think that through.
I think that's a good idea, too. That's a really good thought, Mary Lou.
The whole pack. I don't know if I would want her taking calcium. I've heard some, well.
I think that the reason that people have a calcium problem deposited in the wrong place is because they don't have any osteodense. They don't have a transportation system to get it to the right place. But drop it here and there. Somewhere, we had somebody whose blood vessels, the calcium went away and the bone spurs went away. Actually, we had people who had bone spur problems long ago. And that went away when they started taking the calcium.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Oh, go ahead, Kathleen.
The body needs it. It's just getting it where it's supposed to be in the proper balance, isn't it?
That's exactly what I was thinking. My neighbor also had the same deal. She was having kidney failure right before they left spring to go to Wisconsin, and the day before she left, she said, you know, the doctor has had me on such high doses of calcium, and now they think that my calcium is too high, and that's why I've got kidney problems. And I said, yeah, because there's nothing there to transport the calcium around. So I was pretty on the, and, you know, I remembered that. So it's interesting, both these ladies having the same problem. I got to talk to the lady today. Anyway, I'm glad. Thank you for your help, feedback.
You're welcome. All right. Tomorrow, I haven't talked to Nancy, so I'm not sure what she's doing tomorrow. Obviously, I'll give her a call. And talk to you guys soon. Talk to me here tomorrow morning, same time, same place. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Great call.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Very good slides, yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.